It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. What a week it was. Lots of craziness, lots of, well, stuff we already knew, some smoking gun verification. The former guy having lots of problems finding, people to represent him. Just lots of stuff. And, well, it looks like we're going back to the past for some old hits. And here to share some thoughts on the week that was and all of the craziness that we have had. I've asked our all-star panel of Brett Pransky, the professor, Laura Packard, healthcare advocate, and our good friend Sarah Burris, reporter over at Raw Story, to join us. Guys, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start right from the very beginning. We find a 2-page memo, a 6-point plan, the idea being we're going to overthrow an election. Sorry, voters, you're out of luck. Brett, let's start with you. First thoughts when you saw this this memo come out from the book Peril by Bob Woodward and Costa, thoughts?
Well, I mean, once you get past the initial shock of the fact that there really was a plan to actually overthrow, you know, the election, I keep coming back to the fact that it's a 2-page memo. I mean, that just stuns me. I'm amazed by the fact that you have a plan to overthrow the entire government and you got it down to 2 pages, you know, and they got it down to 2 pages basically because that's probably Trump's attention span. And I'm not saying that, you know, just because I like picking on the guy. That's probably actually why it's 2 pages. You know, when I say it was probably written in crayon, that's me picking on Trump. But the fact is, you know, it's what really stuns me about it is the fact that they thought it was going to be so easy that they could fit the entire plan in a 2-page memo. It just blows me away.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I got to be honest, Laura, you know, I'm looking at this and the sad thing is this is probably the first plan that they actually had in those 4 years.
Exactly. Just like the healthcare plan, I figured that this was more fictional than anything. So shocked, just like Brett said, that they actually had a plan, and also shocked that Mr. Potato Dan Quayle himself saved the Republic.
Yeah, it's crazy. Sarah, your thoughts?
I just want to remind everyone that if you're going to crime, do not put it in a memo. Do not put it in writing. It is really advantageous to just sort of keep your criming kind of like under the radar a little bit. So that's my advice.
Yep. No, my grandfather always said this. When I was a kid, he would say, you know, never write anything down, never leave voice messages on answering machines, and never tell anybody, because then you've only got about a 50% chance of getting ratted out. You tell somebody, it's certain you're going to get ratted out, but here it is. But here's the thing, and here's the question. You know, you look at this, I don't think there was anything in that memo that we didn't already know. They trial ballooned all this stuff in November and December. So we were already talking about it, which is why I don't think anybody's paying attention to it really right now, because we already knew. We're like, meh.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think that the sad thing is that we should be talking more about this because it is a huge deal. And I get that these are issues that we've talked about before, but it's so frustrating because we can't normalize this stuff. We can't just allow this to pass by just because it was a little 2-pager and it's like, oh, we've heard this before. Like it's a big deal.
Right. And it didn't work that time, but they're trying to set the stage so that it will work in the future. You know, they're working the courts and the legislatures and normalizing the idea that this election was somehow stolen. So they are getting ready to do it again, and they might actually succeed if they try it again.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite remarkable. But, you know, the thing that I look at, and I and maybe you guys will agree or disagree with me. You know, as I'm reading through each of these points, I'm thinking of my conservative friends who would be reading this going, Yeah, that's the founding fathers would have been for this. The folks with the trifold hats, they'd have been all on board. There's founding fathers, you know, stamp of approval on this, so it would be okay. And I know the conservatives would have been thrilled with it because strong leader taking over government. But I also sadly think the Democrats would have eventually, they would have eventually rule of law kind of nonsense come along had they succeeded.
Yeah, that's a real possibility. I mean, again, these kind of creative readings of all kinds of important documents and using them for your own purposes and reading them only in ways that you can kind of use to subvert, you know, the rules and norms. It's a pretty common thing, you know, on the right. We hear this kind of stuff all the time. We usually don't see it, you know, see it attempted to be put into action. And this was definitely, you know, was definitely that. And so now, good thing that Pence didn't end up, you know, doing his part in the whole thing. Thank you again to Dan Quayle of all people, which, you know, I just find, you know, unbelievable. But it could have been a whole lot worse. And yeah, I could have seen a lot of people, especially conservatives on the right. Keep in mind that the right wing spin machine, when it speaks, all of them follow along. I mean, it's they all march in lockstep, or maybe in goose step in some cases. But, you know, they would have gone along. They would have, and there would have been a significant portion of the population saying, yep, this is exactly what we ought to do. So it was pretty scary.
Yeah, and I mean, the past 4 years of Trump was all about breaking laws, breaking rules, going as far as you could go. I mean, they stole a Supreme Court seat. In Obama's term, he should have had the opportunity to appoint a Supreme Court justice, and the Republican-controlled Senate didn't even bother to hold a hearing, and they got away with that.
No, and for me, the memo, when you read the first line, they came out and said that there were two sets of electors. There were no competing electors. There were one group of certified electors. And this is where the big lie comes in, because I actually know people who have said, no, Georgia sent two sets of electors. Arizona sent two. I'm going, they may have sent two, but only one was certified. It was done, which is why they were doing the hardcore press on the Georgia Secretary of State to try and get what they needed out of this memo. So now looking backward, knowing now that this was all in writing and that they were working this, Trump going after that Raffensperger is a pretty big deal, don't you think?
I think so, but I wanted to say too that which state was it where the police wouldn't even let the new electors in the building? I mean, there was an actual state where the fake Trump electors tried to be like, oh no, we're also electors and we need to get in there, and they're like, no, you're not. Off you go. And that actually works. Never underestimate somebody who has security written across their chest. And then I would say, too, the thing that happened on Thursday is Trump is now talking about doing an audit in Texas, which he won. And really the only purpose of that is to call into question more elections.
Right.
It's to make people less confident in our elections and in our government and all of that. And it's so frustrating because it's so obvious.
Yeah, and we had the MyPillow guy calling into question Alabama, claiming that Alabama flipped 100,000 votes. I'm going, did nobody read the MyPillow guy in on what was the actual coup here? Did no one tell him that all of the claims of voter fraud were actually just fraudulent claims and the real goal was the 6-point plan? Did nobody read him or Rudy Giuliani in on this?
Yeah, it doesn't look like it. Yeah, the idea that this actually got as close as it did, you know, to happening is pretty frightening. It's something that I really think we have to pay attention to in the future, because this could be, they always say the past is prologue. It's very likely that this kind of scheme is going to happen again. Keep in mind, the next time it happens, there have been a lot of laws passed in a lot of states allowing them to set the stage for this in ways that could actually get it done. And so, you know, this has been a kind of a full court press ever since the election, so that the next time it happens, they can actually flip that switch. And, you know, and who knows, maybe the next you know, whoever it is in Pence's spot says okay, and then they've got the stage set, and then we have a real constitutional crisis on our
hands. Yeah, because if you look at the memo, they tried to get Lawrence Tribe in this. You know, they even got the liberal Lawrence Tribe. I mean, they thought of it. See, the liberals even think this is okay. It's quite remarkable. But Laura, you know, let me ask you, because I go back to this. You know, you look at all of this stuff that we now know, and we knew back then, but this kind of lays it out. What do we do about all of those claims that there was all this voter fraud, you know, all of these shenanigans going on, that Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell and none of the lawyers were dumb enough to take into a court of law, but in the court of public opinion, just lied, cheated, steal, you know, fraudulently claimed all this stuff. What do we do with that? Does that now mean that they knew that all that basically the voter fraud claims were all fraudulent? Is that what that means?
Well, I don't know how much Trump and his people actually believed, or they were just willing to take power any way they could. I mean, his lawyers arrived to work in a clown car, so it's difficult to say what all they are actually going along with and how much they're humoring Trump with. But one thing we haven't talked about is I don't expect more from a snake than being a snake and doing snake things. But how about the reporters that knew all this stuff and have been sitting on all this stuff for months and didn't bother telling the American public about what they knew because they wanted to write a book and get a big fat advance?
Excellent point. Our reporter person here, Sarah, you know, your profession's kind of let us down a little bit. Not you, of course. You do fantastic work over at Raw Story, and I highly suggest people go to rawstory.com, my favorite reporter in the country. But, you know, why did our media let us down?
You're totally just covering your butt there. This is the second time Woodward has done this, too. His first book was the one where he sat down with Trump early on in the pandemic, and Trump made it very clear that he knew that the pandemic was a big deal. He knew it was deadly. He knew it was going to be huge. He believed, you know, in whatever science the virus said, and it wasn't until we didn't find this out until, what, the very end that, and so the whole pandemic, right, the whole stupid year, we had to deal with Trump lying about the virus. And now it's happening again. And so at some point, you're just kind of like, hey, Woodward, at what point do you believe it's more important to put your country first and money second? Because if it's me and I get that stuff, that's going up right away. I'm not going to write a book deal, you know, try and get a book deal on it. I'm gonna put it up because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And that's what should be the profession, right? Yeah. Like, that's what we should do.
No, I mean, it's just amazing to me. But now knowing what we now know, and this is kind of, in my view, almost like the smoking gun, because it is all there. There aren't just conjecture. We just didn't listen to trial balloons that were floated. Does this now mean that, you know, like Dominion Voting Systems, who are suing Sidney Powell and the MyPillow guy and Rudy Giuliani for gazillions of dollars, and I got to think Trump as well, because, you know, he was involved in this. Is this like, Your Honor, Exhibit A, pay us? Let's start with you, Laura.
I mean, that may be one of the few ways that we see justice is through lawsuits from aggrieved parties, because so far it doesn't seem like our government is willing to hold these folks to account. So, I mean, maybe money's the only way we're gonna see some people pay.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this and you go, Sidney Powell had kind of a decent reputation. Lynn Wood, I guess, was something of, in some circles, a reputable attorney. Rudy Giuliani was America's freaking mayor. And now they're literally clowns.
I would say, too, look at the what the conversation that was reported for Georgia. Trump very much knew that this was all a lie. And the conversation that he had, if, you know, knowing that that was a lie, that is straight up voter fraud. So that investigation that's happening in Fulton County with the DA there, you have to wonder, like, there's no way that he can escape, at the very least, being called out on voter fraud, right? Like, he can't possibly get out of that. Please tell me that's true.
Well, I mean, we have seen him pull off all kinds of really ridiculous criming right out in public and get away with a whole lot of it. You know, the one thing that I think is almost certain to happen, where there will be some accountability, is that the folks at Dominion are about to get a whole lot richer, because their case is ironclad. Now, when it comes to criminality and holding these folks, you know, accountable, you know, in the criminal world, you know, or in the criminal justice system, you never can tell. But I don't think there's any way he escapes charges. I don't think there's any way he escapes being indicted at some point. What happens after that, you have to, you know, is it's all the American circus. You have to just let it play out and do what it does. But I don't think there's any way that he avoids charges.
Yeah. So last line of questioning here, because, you know, now that this is out and it's in writing, it's in black and white, it's a Trump lawyer, he's taking it on. Does it matter? I mean, does the base care that their guy was trying to usurp 220 years, 216 years of peaceful transitions of power, trying to usurp an election? Do they care about democracy? Let's start with you, Sarah.
I don't think that they care. The one thing that I would like, though, is being able to tell whatever Trump supporter, you know, whatever you're arguing with them on Facebook, and be like, look, he admitted that he didn't win the election. So why don't you believe that? He's the one who's telling it to you.
Yeah. So no being reinstalled, Laura. That's not going to happen. You don't see the because they keep pushing the reinstallment date off. You don't see that happening, do you?
I'm sure it's just around the corner, around when I'm going to win the $1 billion Mega Millions. But I also think it's important to figure out how systems of accountability can work in our country. Because if you look at all of the gymnastic stars that were testifying the past few days, the FBI knew things and did nothing. Or even go back to when our economy crashed in 2007, 2008. Those bankers got off scot-free. So we've had an accountability problem in our country for a long time, where the people at the top never really get held accountable. I mean, how long was Jeffrey Epstein operating and people did nothing? They made it go away.
Excellent point.
We're definitely dealing with two completely different systems of justice, you know, based on who you are and what you have. And I don't think there's any way we can argue with that, because we keep seeing, you know, people of means, you know, getting off the hook for all kinds of ridiculous stuff.
Yep.
Meanwhile, the guy down the street doesn't get away with anything.
No, you're spot on. Guys, I got to take a quick break right here. Hope you'll stick around through the break. On the other side, I got a lot to get to. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here. Going to take a quick break right back after that. Stick around.
There's nothing more American than workers standing up. Smith Show.
I want to take a second to tell you about our friends over at the Political Voices Network. PVN is a new network dedicated to promoting left-leaning voices like the Stephanie Miller Show, the Tom Hartman Program, Richard French Live, and of course, the Rick Smith Show. To find these great shows and lots of other great content, go to politicalvoicesnetwork.com and help us pull the plug on the corporate-controlled mainstream media. And as always, thank you for your support. Here at The Rick Smith Show, we don't accept corporate advertising. Never have, never will. In fact, we spend most of our time giving corporations the finger. We don't stop the show every few minutes to sell you supplements, beet juice, or whatever snake oil the right-wing loonies are pawning. That's because we're not sellouts. It's also because we're supported by our friends in labor, and by people like you. If you like what we do, become a patron by going to patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. That's patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. Give what you can, if you can, and help us fight for the working class majority. Because together we bargain, divided we beg. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, going to be fun the next couple of days. If what we're hearing over the last several days from Mitch McConnell and the Republicans is true, We're going to be partying like it's 2009 through 2016, where every time we turned around, there was a ticking bomb. Every time we turned around, we were down to the last minute to pay our bills, and everyone wondering, what's going to happen when we don't pay our bills? Will the global economy crash? What's Granny's not going to get her Medicare? Republicans took us to that point every single time during the Obama years, and we're about ready to go back to it. You didn't hear much during the last guy's term because they were smart. They said, we're not going to do it. Well, we'll see what Democrats do. Nancy Pelosi has said she has vowed we're going to avert a shutdown. And here to share some thoughts on partying like it is 2009, I've got our all-star panel of Laura Packard, healthcare advocate, Sarah Burris, reporter at Raw Story, and the professor, Brett Pransky. Guys, thanks for sticking around.
Sure.
So let's start with you, Brett. Going to party like it's 2009. I remember the Obama years where each and every time we bumped up against the debt ceiling, it was, we got to have a pound of flesh. We've got to screw things up. And I still remember, you know, them pushing for Screwquester, which did horrible damage to not just our government, but to our ability to protect our soldiers overseas. Thoughts on returning to the good old days?
Well, to tell you the truth, my first thought on it was that is to get a little nostalgic about it, because I was a fan of Obama in most cases. Didn't agree with him on everything, but agreed with a lot of the things that he did. And at least during that time, life was normal. You know, there was a sense of normalcy in America that we have completely lost track of since 2016. So when we're now back to the fights that I remember from 2008, 2009, 2010, I'm like, hey, this was, you know, it's almost hearkening back to a better time, if there is such a thing. But the thing that really puzzles me is the motivation behind it.
Yeah.
I can't figure out why. You know, and I'm like, what's the end game here? Let's say you accomplish your goal and you cause a shutdown. You do the thing that you are setting out to do. How in the world does that help you? This is what I don't understand about what Mitch McConnell's doing, other than, you know, possibly just the delay tactics involved and just the muddying the waters and so on. If he actually gets what he wants, I don't think he's going to want it anymore. This is the most self-defeating position that I can imagine. And, you know, so if it works out this way, and if we do, you know, get into a situation where we do shut down, I don't see any situation where this isn't pinned almost entirely on Republicans. I don't understand why he would take this position unless he's absolutely certain it's never going to come to pass.
Yeah. Laura, your thoughts?
Well, I think that this is a ransom demand. We don't have the ransom letter from Mitch McConnell yet, but I think that he's posturing so that he can demand more stuff. I mean, I personally am revisiting 2009 because that's when I went to Arkansas and helped get the Affordable Care Act passed in the first place. So it's just been reviewing that again and again and again over the years as Republicans attack the ACA. We never got past 2009, 2010, apparently. But in this case, I think that they think that they can get some stuff in exchange for not crashing the government, or they think if they crash the government, voters will take it out on Biden.
Yeah, no, I see that as well. But understand, I go back to something Dick Cheney said, while he was vice president. He said, you know, of the Democrats, they'll cave. It's what they do. And what has been learned behavior is when Republicans do this stuff, Democrats do tend to give in. And I point back to the Screwquester, where they across the board painful cuts to programs that we desperately needed. They got their pound of flesh. Sarah, your thoughts?
But if you remember during the Trump administration, whenever they had a shutdown, and it was the longest shutdown in government history that we have ever had in this country, I think it was 35 days. Republicans tried the exact same thing, and Trump tried to, you know, pretend that he refused that he wasn't going to sign the budget because he wanted funding for the wall and like all this other stuff. And the economy tanked and everything was terrible and it lasted forever. And it just made Republicans look awful. So, I mean, it's even during the Obama years, everybody knew that the shutdown was because of the Republicans, and keep seeing Democrats being the ones to give in and, you know, go and try and meet with them and, you know, over and over and over again. And I think, you know, even in this case, I just imagine Biden, you know, pulling a Bartlett and walking up to the Capitol and trying to meet with Mitch McConnell or, you know, and Republicans and being like, come on, guys, like, what the hell is the problem?
Yeah.
And I think that would be the way to sort of, you know, hang it around their necks.
No, look, you know, Democrats during the Trump years gave in. You know, they gave because they didn't want to crash the economy. They wanted things to go well. And this is, in my view, and you guys can disagree or agree with me, it's in my view, I think Republicans are wired mentally to be okay with scorched earth. They're okay with causing pain for certain groups of people, especially working people, as where Democrats just... It's not in them to go scorched earth. And Republicans know that, which is why Dick Cheney would say they always cave. It's what they do.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you have one party that cares about outcomes and one party that is nihilist and just cares about points.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. But I think if they mess around with this and get a little too close to what it is that they're after, if they actually do cause a shutdown, what I think could be the end result of that is they could lose the filibuster. Because what better argument is there to, you know, to destroy the filibuster than, hey, a minority, you know, part of the U.S. government can shut down the government for everyone and can keep your grandmother's Social Security check from coming just out of pure meanness. We need to take this away from them because they're not adults and they can't, you know, they obviously can't have this kind of power. So we have to take it away. I think it's cover for, you know, for at least adjusting how the filibuster works, maybe getting rid of it altogether.
No, that would be something positive to come out of it. I just don't see that. But I'm looking at it, you know, if the dog does catch the car, I believe Mitch McConnell thinks that, you know, the average person has the attention span of a gnat, and they're not going to be held accountable for it. And what they in the long run could do is delay and slow the process of getting something actual done, like infrastructure, you know, the Build Back Better plan that would make people's lives better and create a different kind of economy. So for me, this looks like just a stall and delay tactic. Sarah, your thoughts?
I would hope that Democrats would be able to, like, if we do shut down the government, be able to pitch to Americans, look, you know, Republicans are trying to stop you from having roads and bridges. They're trying to stop you from having, you know, childcare and paid family leave. And they're against the child tax credit and they didn't want to support the stimulus. I mean, it's just like, you really can label them as the party of no, which is what we did in the 2006 election, which was really successful. And so the Democrats sort of look like the party of, you know, we want to give you stuff. We want to give you all your money back, that all your tax money that you're paying to the government. We want to give it back to you in infrastructure and all of these amazing things. Republicans just want to, you know, destroy the economy. And I mean, I think that's an easy message to explain to people.
Yeah, and of course, you know, enrich the billionaire class who, through this pandemic, have done wildly well. Thank you very much. But the other part of this for me is talking about the debt as a whole. Look, I got some problems with the debt that we have and how it was run up. And I go back to, you know, the college, you know, Econ 101, you know, the difference between good debt and bad debt. And overwhelmingly, we see Republican debt being bad debt. Oh, we're just giving billionaires more money, where Democrats are trying to invest in things. And I went back and I did just some quick math. And you look at the debt that we're in. Overwhelmingly, it's been Republican presidents who have run up the most debts. You go to, you know, Reagan, the two Bushes, and Trump, you're up over $17 trillion. You look at the, you know, Carter, Clinton, and Obama, you're at 10. So the party who's telling us we need to be fiscally responsible, they seem to be the drunken sailors in this equation.
And 98% of that debt was from somebody who's not named Joe Biden.
Correct. Absolutely correct. But here again, I go back to the fact that, you know, we've given massive tax cuts to the very wealthy and claim that that's going to stimulate the economy. And it hasn't. It just hasn't happened, Laura.
Exactly. I mean, trickle down just doesn't work. If you give money to rich people, maybe they buy a 15th yacht, but most likely it sits in their bank account. That's why Build Back Better is so important, because it puts money into the hands of people that will spend it and grow our economy. But back to the question of what do we do about this? I think it was Nancy Pelosi had has an interesting position that the Constitution says that we already can spend, that this whole debt ceiling limit is self-inflicted, and all we need to do is point out the emperor has no clothes and go about our business.
Right.
So, I mean, there would certainly be lawsuits and things, but that's something that we could try.
No, the key here is the money's already been spent. This isn't, we're not spending any money. It's been allocated. It's been spent. This is just saying, Laura, you've already bought, you know, everything. You bought the groceries, you bought the dress, you bought the new car, you bought the house. You just now got to pay for it. That's all we're saying, that we've got to pay the bills. How hard is this?
It shouldn't be that difficult. I mean, you would think, especially with the Republicans, that, I mean, they voted for the defense reauthorization funding. They voted for the first stimulus. They voted for the 2021 budget, which they passed in 2020. So all of this money that they have spent in between the last debt ceiling raise and now, again, all of that is Donald Trump. So they supported it the first time. Why do they not support it now?
Yeah, almost $8 trillion spent. And I had a conservative friend tell me, you know, Donald Trump, up until the pandemic, he had the lowest rate of debt growth of any president. And I go, yeah, because he inherited an economy that was doing very well, unlike what Obama inherited and unlike what Clinton inherited. There was cleaning up that had to be done during those two administrations. So we're talking apples and oranges here. But, you know, Brett, you just can't get people to think in those terms that, you know, the day things start is the day that, you know, the day the administration changes, everything was theirs, that there's some bleed over.
Yeah, there really is. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that we are, you know, extremely, if not hopelessly, partisan these days. So we lack the ability in many areas to, you know, to look at these issues reasonably, you know, and so everybody is just trying to win for their side. So it's not about what's good for the country or what's good for you or what's good for the neighbors. It's, you know, to use an Ohio term, it's Browns Bengals. We're gonna root for our team, and we're only gonna speak well of our team. We're only gonna speak poorly of that other team, and that's just the way it's gonna go. And I realize the irony of that as I sit here, you know, saying that wearing an Ohio State hat, you know, because I've never had a good word to say about Michigan in my life, nor will I. But that's kind of how we are. We're no longer in a situation where we're trying to come together and have arguments and disagreements, but the same goal, which is what's best for the American people. Now we have gotten to the point where it is solely, completely, and only about winning and the acquisition of power. And, you know, the good of the American people be damned.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's kind of where, and when that's the environment that we're living in and working in, it's impossible to come to any type of compromise or, you know, or see anyone else's position. And it's just, you know, it's kind of a hopeless situation to be in.
Yeah. So Laura, I know you're a Michigan fan. Are you going to let that go?
No. First of all, go blue. Second of all, there's also this whole conservative media ecosystem from Fox News on down to, you know, the runts of the litter with Newsmax and OANN that is pushing misleading information and outright falsehood. So I think a lot of people out there are being weaponized in ways they don't even necessarily know or understand, because they are swimming in a sea of falsehoods. And I think that's a problem. And I don't know that we really have a handle on it. Like, what do we do when there's this whole ecosystem pushing out things that are not true?
Yeah. No, I mean, on the debt front, I had someone tell me, you know, Obama ran up all the debt. I'm going, I don't think you know what you're talking about, and you should stop. You're going to hurt yourself. Don't do that. But a second ago,
Google
you said
that. Google is your friend.
Yeah. What's that?
Google is your friend.
Oh, yeah. But Laura, a second ago, you said when you give rich people money, they, you know, they spend it on things. And today, this story came out that, yeah, they do spend it on things. They spend it on politicians like Kristen Sinema, who evidently got $750,000 from Big Pharma. This isn't new. I think she's been in their pocket for a very long time. But it might explain a little bit of how she is now you know, voting against the prescription drug bill that could lower the prices for all of us.
Well, she said she's against it so far, so she hasn't taken a vote, and we'll see what winds up coming before her to take that vote. But I think you're absolutely right in that we need to tax the rich, not only because we need the money to invest in things that are good for all of us, but also to limit the power that rich people have to buy off our entire system of government, to buy off our media, to set up cable news networks that push nothing but falsehoods. I mean, we've allowed money and power to accumulate in the hands of such a very few people. It's warped our entire government and our entire culture to some extent.
Brett, you got a thought?
Yeah, I could not agree with that statement more. Think about what we've been seeing recently. I was just watching I wasn't watching it, but I saw it in the preview window of Netflix the other day. There's a new Elon Musk documentary out that is designed solely to say how he's going to take us to Mars and he's this great humanitarian. And meanwhile, you know, as we're running up all these bills that we're now trying not to pay, we gave most of that money to Jeff Bezos, who used it to build a penis rocket and launch himself into space. You know what I mean? And it's ridiculous. We have a billionaire space race instead of universal healthcare. It is the most ridiculous thing imaginable, but here we are. You know, and if we really step back and look at it, see it for what it is, rather than, you know, how it's being presented to us, how it's being spun, how we're being played against each other, you know, left, right, and center, it becomes pretty obvious that, wait a minute, something's wrong here. And the wealthy in America are just eating our lunch. I mean, they're just crushing us. And we got to do something about it. I don't know necessarily what that thing is, but we better come together and figure out a solution, because these folks are out of control.
It's crazy. And look, you know, they say, you know, two things are inevitable, death and taxes. Well, both Musk and you know, Bezos, they've figured out how to get out of paying taxes. I'm sure they're probably working on how they get into the next life as well. But guys, I got to take a quick break right here. On the other side, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the stuff that we're seeing coming out of the White House about potentially releasing information around January 6th. So stick around. We're right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1906. That was the day that Dr. Harriet Louise Hardy was born in Arlington, Massachusetts. She pursued a career in medicine, driven by personal family tragedy. She lost her father to pneumonia when she was only 4 years old. She also lost a baby brother to the 1918 influenza outbreak. Dr. Hardy became an early leader in the field of occupational medicine. She was also the first woman to become a full professor at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Hardy began her career in occupational medicine when she began to investigate the causes of illness among workers making fluorescent lights in factories north of Boston. Many of these workers were women. Dr. Hardy researched the cases of berylliosis in Lynn and Salem, Massachusetts. The metal beryllium is used in the making of the lights. Inhaling dust or fumes of the metal can be deadly, but symptoms often do not begin to show up until years after exposure. Symptoms include shortness of breath, coughing, and scarred lungs. Dr. Hardy developed the National Beryllium Registry. It was one of the first registries of its kind to track the impact of a chronic health disorder. Her research helped lead to safety measures in the handling of this dangerous metal. Dr. Hardy also worked with unions, including the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union and the United Mine Workers, to identify and address workplace health hazards. These included substances like lead, mercury, anthrax, and asbestos. She wrote a textbook on the subject of industrial toxicology with another pioneer in the field of occupational health, Dr. Alice Hamilton. Dr. Hardy helped to forge new ground in making job sites more safe and healthy for workers.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, fun tweet of the day. You remember Kaylee McEnany? Remember her? Yeah, go way, way back into the Wayback Machine. The former guy's press secretary. She tweeted out that, quote, the U.S. murder rate under Joe Biden, and she linked to this crime statistic that went from, 1960 to 2020 that showed 2020 by far the worst year for murders in the 60 years there. By way far. This is the first time that I think I've ever seen a previous administration point to the current administration and blame them for bad things that they did, trying to get that off. I mean, the good stuff that happens, they all take that. Yeah, they're doing well because of us. I don't think I've ever seen this. Now, she quickly deleted it, got mocked horribly on Twitter, as she should. I just find it really funny. And here to share some thoughts on, is this expected? Is this what we missed? I've got our all-star panel of Brett Pransky, Laura Packard, and Sarah Burris. Guys, thanks for sticking around.
Hey, thanks.
So let's start with you, Brett. This is a big deal. Do you find this as funny as I do?
Well, I do find it funny that she didn't, seem to understand that the new administration started in 2021, and she was literally telling on herself and her administration. But I think the numbers themselves are important to pay real attention to. I mean, because in 2020, we had a massive spike in the number of murders in the United States of America. And that's something that we need to pay attention to. There's a real problem there. And honestly, while I'm sure there are several factors and lots of different reasons why the numbers are what they are, but I think in today's America, we need to understand that we are probably have a higher population of purely desperate people than we ever have before. Again, we talk about income inequality. We talk about jobs and wages and people not being able to get by, and the fact that it's harder to build a life in America now than it ever has been before. And so now we see the rise in what you can easily make an argument that this is a response to that desperation, because these kinds of crimes are not committed by people who are stable and who feel good about the way their life is going. I mean, these kinds of crimes are committed by very desperate, angry people. And so here we are, we're seeing what could very possibly be the result of just, the how hard it is to live in America these days.
Yeah, no, and look, the UK has done a bunch of studies on when conservative governments take over and they push for, draconian policies, slash, social programs, that suicide rates go up. So for me, in looking at this graph that she puts out, you can go back and look, recession, you see, bad economic times, you see these things go up when the economy's doing well, things go down. It seems like that kind of a cycle. So for me, looking at how bad things were during the Trump years, you go, it was no wonder people are ticked off, Laura.
Yeah, and also I think we're one of the few countries that has such an easy flow of guns. I mean, we make gun violence possible, and that's something that we have tried and failed to do something about for years and years and years now.
It's guns don't kill people, though. People do.
People kill people with guns.
The gun helps. You ever see the comedian
it's
Eddie
really
Izzard?
Helpful. You can't look at somebody and say bang.
Yeah. Eddie Izzard had the best thing. You go. No one does that.
Unless, really
the heart might be a little
heart.
Dodgy, but.
This is the best line ever. But Brett's right. Like the thing that's so tragic here is that it is easier to buy a gun in this country than it is to get out. And especially for my generation, like we've got completely screwed on being able to have the American dream because of what Republicans did to the economy, what Wall Street did to the economy in 2007 and 2008. So, I'm still mad about it. I want to see indictments.
Yeah. And here again, now I said from the beginning when Biden became president, there was no way Biden was going to do anything to hold the previous administration accountable. It's not what we do in this country. We didn't hold Nixon accountable. We didn't hold Reagan accountable. We didn't W. Bush. We didn't hold him accountable. We just didn't do any of that stuff. We didn't hold the banksters accountable. We don't do this. We don't hold rich people accountable. This story that Joe Biden is leaning towards releasing information about Donald Trump tells me that maybe, possibly, we might be looking in at holding somebody accountable. And as Biden said, you know, January 6th was the game changer in all of this. Sarah, let's start with you. Thoughts? Do we get to see any of this stuff? Do you think he actually does it?
I think he will. I think based on what folks have been explaining about this, is that's where the line is for Biden. When you talk about a coup, an attempt to overthrow the legislative branch of government, that's a pretty big line for him. And so this idea of, you know, executive privilege for a former president to cover up a crime, and the courts have made that pretty clear in the Nixon case, that, you know, executive privilege does not extend to covering up your criming. If there is evidence of a crime, then you have to, you know, actually give access to all of the information that's subpoenaed. So, you know, this is, I think Biden has a little bit of legal cover to be able to say, I'm just following what the precedent is. I think Trump is going to end up suing, and it's going to be another one of those stupid lawsuits that last 11 billion years, like we did with the taxes. But I don't know that it's necessarily going to work.
Laura, thoughts?
Well, I think, like what you said, we haven't held people accountable. And when we don't do that, they're emboldened. They just get worse. They do more and bigger criming until somebody stops them. So I think it's time. I mean, these folks tried to overthrow the government. If we don't act now, when do we ever?
Yeah. Do you think, Brett, do you think he does it?
I think he does, because, you know, in the open to the segment, you said that we don't hold these people accountable. We don't have a history of holding these people accountable. We've never done it before. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, every time you mention one of these things, I was thinking in the back of my head, but we've never stormed the Capitol before, you know, and over again. Yeah. But none of these people ever, you know, ever kicked down the doors of the Capitol, or, you know, or, you know, tried to hang the vice president, you know? So I think we're in uncharted waters here. It's true that that past history. We've never held these people accountable, but we are in completely uncharted. We've never been here before.
Yeah. No, we'll just kick in poor people's doors and evict them from their houses. That's okay.
Just shoot them outright.
There is that. But so, Sarah, let me start with you, because, you know, what is it that Joe Biden can release? You know, phone records. What is it that would be information that would be helpful in the investigation to find out what the White House was doing, what the administration was doing on January 6th and the days leading up to it? What do you think is available?
So phone records, any emails from anybody in the White House, any staffer of the White House, any text messages that were sent over a government phone. I think probably what will be one of the most important things are just the flat out call logs, because you'll see all of those Republicans that, you know, called him over the course of, you know, a couple of days. You know, they were talking to him on the 5th. Marjorie Taylor Greene was in the White House on the 5th. And so, you know, the 5th and the 6th, what was, you know, who was he talking to? What was being said? And once you know somebody was talking to him, then you can, you know, subpoena that person and be like, so what were y'all talking about? The weather?
Yeah, you know, the weather was cold that day. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was nice. It was a balmy day. There was a lot of nice people out on the lawn. They had flags. They were waving flags that day, Laura. It was a beautiful day, a patriotic day.
I'm sure they were talking about American Idol, Sarah. So,
on Dancing with the Stars.
Exactly. We need to hold people accountable. I mean, the last time we had an attempted violent overthrow of our country was several years of civil war, and we sort of did accountability for a while after that, but then that sort of stopped, and we continue to see those divisions today. The Confederacy lost, but that's not even being taught in some schools in the South. So Trump lost the election, but there is a goodly chunk of people in this country that don't know that, don't believe that. And we are sowing the seeds for another 100 years of strife if we don't figure out how to get through this and hold people accountable.
Absolutely. And I want to know what Lauren Boebert was doing and the traitor green woman and Josh Hawley and Madison Cawthorn and all of the people who now there's a claim out there. A representative is saying that there was cheering and there were representatives who were happy that things happened. I can see those people being the ones who are happy because they were the one, you know, Josh Hawley, the famous fist pump and all of that. It was a horrific day, but I got to wonder, you know, is it accurate? Were there people cheering in Congress while their doors were being knocked on? Let's go to you, Brett. Thoughts?
Sure. I certainly think that's possible. I mean, when you just look at the day-to-day behavior and you keep asking yourself, how low will they go? And the answer is always, well, yeah, they'll go that low. You know, you put the bar all the way to the ground, they'll dig a hole to get under it. You know what I mean? So the idea that, you know, if someone said that there were people who were potentially cheering or saying, yeah, this is a great thing. Look at what all these great patriots. Yeah. I buy that possibility. You know, I'm not going to go out and say, oh, it happened and it was certain, because, you know, I don't repeat that kind of stuff like that, but it's definitely possible that it did happen. And if it did, you know, it's certainly something that I wouldn't put past them.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I hope Joe Biden does release it. I hope we get to the bottom. I hope we find every person who funded the bus trips and funded what happened on January 6th. And we give people nice long prison terms and we hold people accountable for the first time in my lifetime. I hope that's where we go. I do want to change topics right here because a couple of things, you know, popped up I thought were interesting this week. Representative Kristi Houlihan here in Pennsylvania put forth an amendment, an idea that, hey, maybe we should make women be susceptible to selective service. We're going to start drafting women. Let me start with you, Sarah. Should we start drafting women into the military as we've been doing with men?
Yes, absolutely. Because women are great for the military. I mean, that's the thing, is that women are, you know, we've proved over and over again that women in the military are fantastic. So I think there's no reason to, you know, say, oh, we have to protect the ladies from, you know, from the combat. No, women are strong and amazing and smart, and they can contribute to the military just as well as men do. I think where we should be trying to draft people is making sure we can draft rich people who normally would flee the country or all of a sudden get boned first.
No, I'm right there with you. And Brett, let me go to you because you had a great idea. Don't draft the rich people, just draft their money.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You know, because we don't do a very good job drafting, you know, people of means. We always leave in loopholes and things like that. It ends up being the children of poor and working class families end up fighting our wars for us. But if we're going to draft people, or especially if we're going to allow our wealth class to get so ridiculously wealthy and completely out of bounds kinds of wealth, yeah, we should put a little bit of that back. So you know what, the United States Army sponsored by Jeff Bezos, I'm totally for that. Let's put next year's, you know, Pentagon budget on the Bezos family. Let's go ahead and do that. I mean, it's as reasonable a way to draft and conscript folks as any other we've ever had.
No, I'm right there with you. Personally, I think we should do away with the draft. We're not gonna have it. But if you're gonna have it, everyone's got to be in it, because then maybe everyone's gonna vote, because it could be my behind. Laura, your thought of the last bit on this?
Exactly what you said. I don't support the draft. I don't support endless wars, but I think that it should be fair. If you're drafting men, why should you not draft women? And you should certainly draft billionaires.
And their money as well. That's my view. Last bit. Howard Stern came out, said that, you know, Joe Rogan is making things worse. How is it that Fart Man is now the moral compass of the country?
That's how bad things are in the United States. Like, the virus is so terrible. We have wrecked so many lives and so many families that the voice of reason is Howard Stern.
And the thing is, I love Howard Stern. I've listened to him for years. I'm a big fan. But this just shows me how far off the rails we've gotten when this is finally someone who spoke up. in a position of power and said, no, you're making this worse. This whole idea that you're taking the kitchen sink instead of just getting the freaking vaccine is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, it is shocking to me that people would rather take an unproven medical invention like the monoclonal antibodies instead of a vaccine that at this point hundreds of millions of people around the world have taken with few major side effects. So why are you taking the $3,000 experimental cocktail instead of the $30 vaccine that you won't pay a cent for?
Now, and the important part is that he's got the resources to be able to do this. And I said this the day that he came out and said, we threw the kitchen sink at it. You know, I took the ivermectin, this, that. They go, yeah, you've got the resources to have the best medical people around you to administer the drugs in the exact right amounts. You're not lug nut running down to Tractor Supply, getting the buy one, get one, and saying, if one's good, two's got to be better. No, you've got the best medical professionals money can possibly buy that a good portion of the people in this country don't have. And I do agree. I agree with Stern. He's making it worse. Brett, your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think what makes it even worse is the fact that not only does he have, you know, access to the best medical care in the world, he also has a massive platform. So by saying these, oh, we threw the kitchen sink at it, we're going to do this and this and this and this, he is telling people to do that same thing, even if that's not his intent. Even if he says, well, this is what I did and it was right for me and you make your own choices, even if you put those caveats in there, when you say that kind of thing with that kind of platform, that kind of massive microphone that he has, you're going to steer people in the wrong direction. And, you know, again, we talked earlier about accountability and the fact we don't hold people accountable. And I don't necessarily know how to do it in an instance like this. But man, there should be some form of accountability for encouraging people to do these things that are horribly dangerous for them.
At some point, I hope we come to our collective senses. But sadly, the amount of misinformation out there and you know, I don't know how you combat that. I don't know how you, outside of having panels like this to say, you know, to point this stuff out, I don't know how you combat it.
Well, I mean, the platforms, the social media platforms do have some responsibility and they do take some action to tamp down the misinformation, but not as much as they should. They should be doing a lot more because the information that's flowing out there is ridiculous. Like Joe Rogan taking ivermectin or Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend's ball size. Like do something to spread good information instead of weaponizing this bad information to flow ever faster to more people.
Yeah, my Jeep broke down. My mechanics asked me if I got the vaccine and I said yep. He goes, well, there it is. So my Jeep broke down because I got the vaccine. That's how ludicrous some things have gotten. It's crazy. Crazy times. But guys, I appreciate you sticking around for us. Appreciate you guys on the panel. As always, fantastic stuff. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Make sure you follow our all-star panel, Brett Pransky, the professor. You can follow him on social media at Brett Pransky. Also, Laura Packard, make sure you follow the work that she does. We'll get links out on social media. And of course, Sarah Burris of Raw Story. Make sure you check out the fabulous work that she does over there at rawstory.com. If you got questions, you got comments, there's a topic you'd like us to cover, by all means, reach out to me at rick@therickSmithShow.com. Tell us what you think. We would love to hear the feedback. Thanks so much for being here. If you miss any portion of the program, therickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Make sure you follow us on social media at Twitter, at Rick Smith Show. Also, give us a like over at Facebook. Subscribe over at YouTube. Do all those things. That's how you can interact. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Here at The Rick Smith Show, we don't accept corporate advertising. Never have, never will. In fact, we spend most of our time giving corporations the finger. We don't stop the show every few minutes to sell you supplements, beet juice, or whatever snake oil the right-wing loonies are pawning. That's because we're not sellouts. It's also because we're supported by our friends in labor and by people like you. If you like what we do, become a patron by going to patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. That's patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. Give what you can, if you can, and help us fight for the working class majority. Because together we bargain, divided we beg. Thank you for tuning in.